Hi, podcast listeners. Lost in the Stacks broadcasts on WREK Atlanta from the campus of Georgia Tech every Friday at noon. Thanks for joining us through the internet. And if you have a moment, let us know how you found us, how you're listening, and what you like. We are always trying to improve and expand. Enjoy the show.
I don't want to freak you out, but another department filed a planning claim for Lot 48.
Damn it! The library?
Pawnee's library department is the most diabolical, ruthless bunch of bureaucrats I've ever seen. They're like a biker gang. But instead of shotguns and crystal meth, they use political savvy and shushing. We got a big problem with the library.
Punk-ass book jockeys.
Wait, why do we hate the library?
The library is the worst group of people ever assembled in history. They're mean, conniving, rude, and extremely well-read, which makes them very dangerous.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the one and only research library rock and roll radio show. I am Charlie. My co-host is Amit.
Hey, everyone.
And we both work at the Georgia Tech Library, where we are punk-ass book jockeys.
Mean, conniving, rude.
Anthony is on the board.
Hey.
Wendy is in the studio with us. She is a punk-ass records jockey.
Oh, yeah.
And for the next hour, we've got music and library talk for you. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
That's right, Charlie. Today, our show is called Murakami Shenanigans.
Which is just a weird title.
We should just append shenanigans to everything, like demand-driven acquisition shenanigans.
Ranganathan shenanigans.
Oh, that's a band name.
Most definitely. We will get into the shenanigans in a moment. Our songs today are about privacy and fame. And all things Dylan-esque. That's Bob Dylan-esque.
This show is a cornucopia.
We start with a tune from the spot right where the world Haruki Murakami meets the world of librarians. It's from his book called Wind Up Bird, The Wind Up Bird Chronicle. This is Wind Up Bird by Arthur and the Librarian. Band name.
I've never heard of any of this before. You are freaking me out. You're just making stuff up. You punk-ass book jockey.
Arthur and the Librarian.
That was Wind Up Bird by Arthur and the Librarian. And from what I understand, that is directly connected to a book called The Wind Up Bird Chronicles by
Haruki Murakami,
who gave us the name of the show for Murakami Shenanigans.
The Murakami Shenanigans.
Explain yourself.
What are these shenanigans
and
of
who's
which
this dude?
We speak? Well, Haruki Murakami is the most famous writer in Japan. He's still alive. He's still producing. He actually just wrote a pretty interesting novel called The Colorless Tsutsuru Tazaki and His Years of Pilgrimage.
Should we just apologize ahead of time for all mispronunciations of Japanese? Although,
Sumimasen, ne?
Yeah.
Oh,
see,
wait a minute.
I forgot all about when. Can you tell us what Amit just said?
Colorless Tsutsuru Tazaki.
I got to see the word. I'm going to mess up the pronunciation anyway. All right.
Feel free to correct us.
What are the shenanigans? Well, his borrowing record from when he was a teenager growing up in Kobe, from Kobe High School, was released. They were going through some old books in
the library.
And his library borrowing record
the
was
released.
The stuff
he checked out when he was a kid was released.
By a newspaper in Japan.
So his school library.
His school library.
Okay. What was the newspaper doing with his records?
Well, apparently they were throwing out some old books. Don't ask me why anyone would
want
to do that.
The newspaper was throwing out old books?
The library.
Okay.
And someone came across his checkout cards or whatever. So
this is celebrity shenanigans.
Someone
discovered, oh my heavens, I have stuff about Haruki Murakami right in front of me.
Scholar celebrity shenanigans, because he is a scholar.
But you said he's a novelist.
He's a novelist, yeah.
Yeah. And I can see, since I'm the only one without a laptop, I'm looking kind of over your shoulder at that computer screen. And is it vodka? There's some fish and some other stuff. And he's an artist and very much a, looks like a free spirit.
He's a free spirit. His website is incredible. His website, Haruki Murakami, is incredible because, first of all, he's been silent about this whole thing.
How long ago did it happen?
This happened last year.
And he hasn't said anything?
He hasn't said anything about it. It happened late last year. There's been a tiff between the Japanese Library Association and the newspaper that released his borrowing record. He's been silent. And if you go to his website, if you go to harukimurakami.com, what you see is an image with the desk of Murakami and little places all through the image where you can click and see why that thing on his desk matters to him when he's writing. I mean, you're getting like really into his process.
Are you trying to imply somehow that he sort of declined privacy to begin with?
I think so. I think this, but the greater question is, what is it about a library borrowing record that we as librarians feel so is so sacred?
So the Japanese Library Association, have they brought legal action against the newspaper?
No.
Or just a strongly worded statement?
Yeah, some back and forth.
That's
what
really happens with librarians. It's like, right. I object strenuously.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And then also, like, on the other hand, why is the public or the newspaper interested in the borrowing record? Like, why is this interesting at all? It does seem to contain some power and indicate something secret about the person who checked out the books. But, like, what is that?
So we should use the Bob Dylan metaphor, or the analogy. If someone in America discovered a list of what Bob Dylan checked out of his library when he was 15, that's the kind of feeling we're talking about. It's like, right. Oh, wow, where did the artist come from?
And I've got to fly in Bob Dylan here because the interesting thing, many of our listeners are probably aware that the Bob Dylan secret archive, Dylan is still living and producing great music and touring.
Debatable.
But his secret archive is now at the University of Tulsa, I believe.
Is Dylan big in Oklahoma?
Well, it's with Woody Guthrie's.
He wanted to be among the master that he...
Of course, right. Got it, yeah.
But, I mean, I've looked through some of the documents, and, I mean, you've got some... You really get through his kind of writing process. I mean, there's some... The first version of Blowing in the Wind, you know, things like that. But there's a threshold there.
He chose to give those records.
He chose.
He's a living artist who chose the papers. Yeah. And anything that's on this Murakami website, I assume, has his blessing, right? It's a curated stripping away of privacy.
Right.
But this is some random stuff that somebody found. And also, I guess, as an archivist, Wendy, what would you think of this record, this piece of paper, or whatever form it's in? I actually don't know what form it came in, but, you know,
the borrowing record?
Yeah, how would you handle this random chunk of information dropped on your desk? Hey, I found something.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly could see the research value in it, the interest value. You know, people who want to be a great novelist like Murakami might want to emulate him. They might want to check out everything he checked out. It's an amazing archival record for anyone who's interested in him. On the other hand, like, I am also a librarian. I understand why this particular type of, you know, ephemera that may convey a lot about someone's life is perhaps not open, for it should not be open.
Well, professionally, do you have a responsibility to contact a living, you know, so he's a living person. You have this record. It's clearly not from him. Is there any ethical or professional responsibility to tracking down whether it's real, whether they want it in a record, you know?
Yeah, I mean, archives are interesting with this whole patron privacy thing. In a lot of ways, we are more into privacy and embargoes and redaction and, like, waiting hundreds of years to provide access to stuff.
Did you say hundreds of years?
Oh, yeah, it could be, yeah. And deeds of gift can stipulate these kinds. We try to promote access, but on the other hand, we don't necessarily always place as much value on the privacy of our patrons, our end users' data, always. I think that is still a priority, but So anyway, getting the archivist involved in this makes it messy.
So did you just say you don't really keep the privacy of people who come to look at the archives?
Right, right.
Like if Murakami came to check out Bob Dylan's papers, you might present that as, hey, cool, check this out. Murakami's using Bob Dylan's work.
Or we might want to track that Murakami looked at it in case he actually stole part of Bob Dylan's papers and we need to track him down later.
I want to add a sound effect in here, but it is a profane sound effect, so I'll skip it.
But it's clear that someone's in the wrong here and it's the newspaper. That is clear.
Okay, in the last 30 seconds of the segment, why is the newspaper in the wrong?
Because, and I quote, disclosing the records of what books were read by a user without the individual's consent violates the person's privacy, from the Japanese Library Association.
Is it possible that you could blame the person who found the record and gave it to the paper?
Nope.
Why not?
Because this is professional ethics.
We need a newspaper person here to follow this through. But
yeah.
I see the rock sign is flashing. We'll be back with more library talk and shenanigans about patron privacy after a music set.
File this set under ML420.D98D66.
I'm awake.
That's a great song.
That was Bob Dylan Blues by Syd Barrett. And before that, Bob Dylan wrote propaganda songs by the Minutemen. And we started off the set with Bob Dylan by Sea of Dogs, songs about the influence of Bob Dylan.
Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks. Today's show is called Murakami Shenanigans. And in the first segment, we discussed famous writer Haruki Murakami's dirty laundry.
Well, it was just adolescent reading history. I mean, everybody's got some of that.
The laundry doesn't get dirtier than adolescent. I'm just saying. But I think this is we need to come back to this point. But I think at the heart of the matter is, what are the responsibility of a librarian?
Let's go to the core here. What were they doing with, how old is he? I mean, 50-year-old?
He's in the 50s, yeah.
Oh, he's 50. Okay, so 45. What age are people? I don't even know. So call it 40. What are they doing with 40-year-old borrowing records?
Well, yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, that should be gone.
Our requirement is to destroy those records, right?
We've got it set up that you can't even, as a user, go in and pull up your... this isn't true anymore, but we used to make it so that you couldn't even go back and look at your own history, because we were like, if we don't have it, then no one can ask for it. Mm-hmm. You cannot fulfill a court order for something that you don't have, so we made sure we didn't have it.
And this came up a lot with the Patriot Act and the librarians who were... They had a gag order, right? They had to give up records, and then they couldn't talk about it, and yeah. So it's like, a defense mechanism.
Let's make sure we don't have that, yeah.
And that's out of the Patriot Act now, right? That's been excised, that's been updated, so that section has been... It's no longer in the... Right?
I will believe you, Amit, but I have no knowledge.
I feel like the ALA pushed hard to get that thing out of there.
And we know how congressmen really respond to ALA pressure.
Hey, they tried.
I feel like mostly the ALA is the minority report on any of this stuff. It's like, again, we strenuously object to this thing that you're doing. And they say, oh, yeah, thanks.
Good sir.
Thanks, librarians. Okay. What were they doing with that record, though? I mean, that really bothers me. And I know it sounds a little bit like I'm making a joke, but it really bothers me that there's some kind of floating around. Like, how many books were on this record? What kind of record-keeping tomfoolery, jiggery-pokery is taking place that it can just be randomly found by, and I believe you said this off-air, a volunteer who's helping read a collection?
The cards were apparently leaked to the paper after a volunteer who once taught at the school, former teacher,
should
have known better, came across them while sorting out old library books that were to be thrown away.
So we're also talking about, in a way, this is school libraries, which I don't know a whole lot about in terms of patron privacy. And we're talking about minors, too, or people who are no longer minors, but he was. So did he... I don't know if it's the same. I'll have to get a school library.
And I don't want to get conspiratorial, but from what you just said, Amit, came across old records, moving books around, it sounds like someone discovered the card in the back of the book that has Murakami's name on it and said, oh, hey, there's stuff here, and then went looking for, because I don't think it wasn't a sheaf of paper stuck in a book, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if that's what they... Okay. I assume that 40 years ago, JLA, they were using the...
The JLA should strenuously object to this volunteer.
Yeah.
Because they did something wrong, like ethically wrong.
And you can imagine...
On purpose.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, Charlie, when you said celebrity shenanigans, because there's probably some money involved, right?
Of course we can assume that someone's like, can I have a favor by giving you these records? But
is it really the volunteer's fault, or is it the perhaps library infrastructure that didn't support people or give people the time to do appropriate records management? I mean, we all lack resources. Just saying.
Wendy's going back to sleep.
It might not be the volunteer's fault.
How would it be not the volunteer's fault?
Because somebody didn't give people the resources they needed in order to have the time to destroy the records, perhaps. Or
40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not quite an argument, is it? It's sort of this might be the cause of it. But the individual still has to be responsible for that moment of deciding these records are going to the paper.
Yeah.
And maybe the library in training their volunteer staff should have said, by the way, if you come across any personal information, put it in the shredder, or, here's the process.
Okay, now, but that also implies a little bit that
because
of the professional.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so should not this be something that you just know not to do? Shouldn't you just know not to do this without any training? I'm looking at you, Wendy. I mean, like, shouldn't this be not as a professional thing, but the volunteer, shouldn't they have known not to spread someone's business around?
I don't know. I mean, I think ideally they should have been trained. There should be resources.
No, before training. I mean, like,
as an individual.
As an individual relating to another individual, as simply a citizen.
No, I think we live in a culture where we share everything and we agree to terms of service without reading them, and we're so not aware of our own privacy. We don't value it, and we don't value other people's privacy.
So these are the little holes in the membrane that are slowly growing. This person's like, oh, cool, I found a thing that's out in the world. It's public, so I'll share it.
Yeah. First instinct is to share.
And maybe, gosh, it would be kind of tragic if he did, if the direction was, if you find something, shred it. I mean, he is a very respected, well-known author. Years from now, people would want to know that.
Oh, Amit's a pod person. Did you see? Did you see how he just pivoted into...
This volunteer is a hero.
Well, the volunteer could have mailed it to Murakami and asked that he put it in his archives when he gives
it. Did you say vulture or volunteer?
Volunteer.
Okay, I thought vulture.
The vulture's volunteer could have asked for some guidance, could have suggested that...
True.
I mean, something certainly more...
We need to interview the volunteer.
That would be cool. But, I mean, I think I'm in a bad place when I try to sort out whether someone should be blamed for an action despite the action being made acceptable by cultural standards. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a way you can finally land on a yes or no answer there, but it seems so emotional. It seems so sort of fraught. It seems vague and nebulous, and I hate that.
Well, maybe, I mean, maybe we need to do more advocacy about why patron records should be kept private so that individuals know that. And in line with that, why individuals should care about their own privacy and how they can control it and enact it, and things like the Library Freedom Project that we've talked about before.
That sounds like something we should talk about after a music set.
We're discussing patron privacy on today's Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with more on the left side of the hour.
This is Michelle Casto from the DC Punk Archive at DC Public Library. You're listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
Today's show is called The Murakami Shenanigans. And hey, Wendy, how are you supposed to really say Murakami? I heard you say it
properly.
Subtlety and grace earlier.
I think it's Murakami.
Thank you. For better or for worse, when we talk about privacy, and that we is everybody, we often return to Orwell. Here's a quote. "It was terribly dangerous to let your thoughts wander when you were in any public place or within range of a telescreen. The smallest thing could give you away. A nervous tick, an unconscious look of anxiety, a habit of muttering to yourself. Anything that carried with it the suggestion of abnormality, of having something to hide. In any case, to wear an improper expression on your face was itself a punishable offense." There was even a word for it in Newspeak. Face crime. That's George Orwell from the novel 1984, Book 1, Chapter 1. So chew on that. And file this set under PL856.U673H5713.
Celebrity Lifestyle by the Swans. Before that, Phil Oakes with Chords of Fame. Those were songs about fame bringing unwanted attention.
We're talking about patron privacy on today's Lost in the Stacks. We started with Murakami, went on to talking about privacy and why library records matters, and to wrap up
responsibilities for volunteers.
And to wrap up, what are we going to do, Wendy?
I don't know. Figure it out.
You just got back from Code for Lib, right?
Yeah.
Not to disclose anything that you didn't want disclosed.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. It's on the record now.
It's in the universe.
Privacy is all over that that conference.
Yeah. So we had it was bookended really by privacy. We ended yesterday with a closing keynote from Gabriel Weinberg, founder of DuckDuckGo, and then started with Kate Krauss, who currently works for the Tor Project. So they were talking a lot about providing opt-in options, and this need to sort of create systems that can
opt-in options. What's that mean?
Well, they both were really moved, I think, by the library communities and the library tech communities' emphasis on patron privacy. Gabriel Weinberg said he turns down pretty much all speaking engagements, but he was so moved by, librarians' commitment to privacy that he wanted to talk to the conference. More and more of our systems do track information about patrons, and we need to create open options and Kate was talking about the need to at least let people opt in for things like geofencing or mobile app pushing.
Would either of you, and Anthony, you can get on this too, if Google said you can choose whether we track your history and give you those advertisements and use your stuff to figure out the better way of searching, would you opt in to that, Wendy?
I'm not sure. I might not. I think I don't. I am sort of scared of certain social media services. My tendency is to hide and be private and introverted. So,
Anthony?
Maybe I'm naive about this, but I think that like a lot of what Google puts together, that kind of like where they target are advertisements.
Yeah.
But instead of advertisements, it's like if you're looking at a map, they'll be like, oh, you've been to this coffee place. Check out this coffee place.
Right.
So I think That's interesting. And so I'm
and by
for
interesting,
it.
Do you mean useful to you?
Yeah, I find it kind of cool. Yeah.
Okay. And they're already doing that, right?
And would you opt in?
I think if you use Google and you sign in, you've opted in.
But I'm saying hypothetically.
Oh, hypothetically.
Hypothetically, okay. If you had the choice, because Google does not give you opt in. I mean, you can not have an account.
Yeah.
But even tracks the IP. But if they said, okay, now you can choose yes or no.
Yeah. So I do. It's I opt in and opt out.
Oh yeah.
As a
private mode.
Yeah.
Sign
right.
out mode. Things like that.
Especially with Google Maps, like, and history and things like that. Sometimes it's helpful. And when it is, I'll click yes.
I had a terrible time with Google Maps because, you know, once I moved to the suburbs, there goes my privacy. Once I moved to the suburbs, getting to work became an adventure every day. And it was so inconvenient to retype Georgia Tech's address into my Google Maps every day. I'm finally like, okay, fine. Track me. Here's the address I go to all the time. And here's my home address so that I tell me how to get home. I was like, oh, we're going by 20. Okay, fine. Oh, it's 85. Oh, I got to cut across Shalford. All that. Yeah, figure out where I live now. But I found myself accepting the convenience and the resulting lack of privacy without a lot of fight.
Yeah.
Which felt a little bit like drinking a Coca-Cola. It's like, oh, it's just, yeah, okay. I'm thirsty. I'm not proud of this.
They make it easy, convenient. You're buying the convenience piece of it, but I think that there is an instinct, and it may be a somewhat uniquely American instinct to, you know, it's annoying, right? It's never like
wait,
oh great,
being American is annoying. Where are we going?
It's
with
annoying
this?
The instinct to give away your information.
Yes.
That there's something, there's a pull there.
The joy of, say, a Goodreads account.
Yeah.
Well, so let's be honest. I have a Goodreads account and I enjoy it very much, and I use it to keep track of what I've read and throw that up on a website and all that. And every once in a while, I think, oh, they probably got some profile, you know?
Right.
Like they basically know where I log in from and they know what I've bought or what I say. And I've created a few shells all by myself, you know, and they're like, ooh, natural language. Cool. Let's use that. Yeah. Do not read shelf. Interesting, you know?
So it's a great opportunity for the right entrepreneur to really market and leverage this the right way.
Oh, I hate everything you just said. It's so hard for me to hear that.
But I'm telling you, this is the American way, right? Someone's going to pick up on this middle ground where you want a Google-like experience, but you don't want to give away your privacy. Well, there you go.
They're now profitable, he said. They still have ads, but they're not. Based on your history.
But that's a search engine, right? That's a searching app. But then on top of like any private information app, you know, your banking apps, the Goodreads, right? And, you know, keeping track of your spending, keeping track of your movements, keeping track of things you do, presenting photos, you know, a photo stream, all these things that that use the cloud, or that is to say someone else's computer somewhere else. These are all things that we use to make stuff easier, but is essentially dismantling any of our rights to be left alone, which is what Garrett Kaiser calls privacy, the right to be let alone, to not have a coffee shop suggested to us. Sorry, Anthony. You know, to not have someone say, oh, you should go home this way. You know, to not have someone advertise everything that you've ever considered at you all the time.
So
the right to be forgotten.
Yeah.
That too.
Maybe what we need is people developing things that make it easy to have privacy, make it convenient.
Instead of the reverse.
Where the convenience factor goes along with the privacy. And maybe part of that has to come from like do-it-yourself empowerment.
Yeah.
Individuals are creating those worlds where they can be private easily.
Because at this moment, it's very hard to make money off of protecting other people's privacy, right?
Unless you're doing like identity theft protection or something.
But
hey,
reputation.com.
There you go. There's a lot of money in that.
I feel like that's a very good answer, but I also feel like there's a lot more that we have to get into. But
well, what are libraries supposed to do? I mean, going forward,
it's like you said earlier. Figure it out, man.
Library Freedom Project, LFP.
What do you think libraries should do, Wendy? We gotta land this segment, and we just opened a new can of worms. So we gotta close it back up as tight as possible.
I think we should go to Code for Lib, which might be in Chattanooga next year.
Oh, nice.
But this is not an advertisement.
Okay, Amit, what do you think we should do?
I think we should go to a music set immediately.
File this set under QA76.9.A25C667X.
That was Nobody's Business by Bankrupt Billionaires. And we started that with How Long by Shady Hawkins, that I will be listening to a lot more of very soon. Those were songs about sneaking around and snooping in other people's business.
Charlie, what is going on at the library next week?
There will be instruction in the arts of finding, connecting, and displaying information, along with, perhaps, meditation, conflict resolution, and bookmaking. I mean, they teach all sorts of stuff there. I can't keep track of it all. We are the Georgia Tech Library, and we are at your service.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Anthony was our engineer today, and our show was brought to you by the SGA.
Really?
That's right, the Student Government Association.
Legal counsel and a carefully made wind-up bird were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Haruki Murakami and the Kobe Shimbun for inspiring this episode about shenanigans. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
You can hear this show again or get in touch with us at wrek.org/lostinthestacks. And you can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or at lostinthestacks.libsyn.com.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we go back to the future to archive the future once again.
It's time for our last song, and we close our show with a passage from Murakami's Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World. Quote, "Say, isn't that Bob Dylan you have on?" "Right," I said, positively 4th Street. "I can tell Bob Dylan in an instant," she said. "Because his harmonica's worse than Stevie Wonder?" She laughed again. Nice to know I could still make someone laugh. "No, I really like his voice," she said. "It's like a kid standing at the window watching the rain." After all the volumes that have been written about Dylan, I had yet to come across such a perfect description. This is Positively 4th Street by Bob Dylan right here on Lost in the Stacks.
Thanks for listening to Lost in the Stacks from WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Find us online at wrek.org/lostinthestacks to see playlists for old shows, connect with our social media, or get in touch with us.